Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
What up, it's your boy Slone Bone of the Mo Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony Family Tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen. In a world full of followers, be proud to be different. Be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women. Everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'm going to ask you this, though. What do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout-out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. We got a hell of a guest for you today. You know, I look back and I've been in the sport for 23 years, and I look back at some of my most memorable moments. And, you know, AKA had left a lot of memories on me because it was a gym that I had never seen before, training I had never seen before, but yet the most humble fighters that you'll ever meet. With that being said, I'd like to welcome the legendary John Fitch to the program. John, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, Don. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, I'm the one that's always on it, bro. You know, You look at gyms across the country, and I know you got an interview with USA Today or whoever next after us, but, you know, so I'm going to kind of throw things a little bit different. Everybody sees what they see on television. Everybody sees what they see on the internet, but I kind of want to, you know how my show goes, I kind of want to show them a little bit more of John Fitch, but we'll still talk about the fight world. You know, how does a young man from Fort Wayne, Indiana, you know, end up being a walk on the Purdue wrestling team and then end up getting some of the greatest tutelage ever from Tom Erickson? You know, that's half the question. But the other half of the question is, how much did he instill in John Fitch moving forward in life?
You know, I mean, yeah, man, luck plays a lot, plays a big factor in all of our lives, you know, and if, you know, you're lying to yourself if you don't see that. But, you know, the luck and the opportunities don't come if you don't work hard. And I was lucky enough, because I worked hard, that I was able to go to college and I was in a position to even walk onto a team. You know, so I lucked my way into running into Tom Erickson and just seeing a different lifestyle, a different way of living. Because I got to see kind of like what he was doing and what guys around him were doing with the sport at the time. You know, I got to speak with got the guy in Freeman. I trained with Gary Goodrich. I trained with Mark Coleman a little bit. You know, when I was still going to school, they'd come in town to work with Tom. And just being able to be around those guys and pick their brains and just kind of hear their stories about these awesome lives they were living, and that they just weren't any type of life I'd ever heard about. And, you know, I was lucky enough to come into contact with those guys and decided that was the life for me. That was the direction I wanted to go. I wanted to see what this other lifestyle and what this martial arts thing was all about. And, you know, and none of that ever would have come to fruition if I wouldn't have done the hard work in the first place, getting my grades in school, working hard as a wrestler, working hard trying to play football. None of that stuff would have happened.
Yeah, self-created, self-motivated. And then you got opportunities that were tremendous, because when you look at it, most people really don't even realize this. So Tom Erickson was a pride fighter, a former pride fighter back in the day. And, you know,
and he was a hobbyist. He was doing it for fun.
Right?
Like, he wasn't like, this is going to be my career, I'm going to be a champion. He was like, he'd get a call, and he'd put in 2 or 3 weeks of training and go out and fight in Japan. You know, like, it was crazy. But it was a different time too. But he was just like, all right, I guess you're gonna pay me the money to go fight somebody. I'll go do it. the guy fought Shannon Briggs in a K-1 kickboxing match. Number two on the Olympic ladder wrestler versus a boxer in a kickboxing match.
That's crazy. You know, the thing that you already mentioned it, but you know, you talk about being introduced to such fighters as Mark Coleman, who I know quite well, Gary Goodrich, you know, all of them who I know quite well. So you had an opportunity to gain knowledge from some of the best in the world in the beginning of your career. You know, and that's an opportunity that most people don't take advantage of. You did. And, you know, you went on and you joined the light heavyweight rankings. And, you know, you come off with four successful wins right off the get. What is
this? I had lost my very first fight to Mike Pyle, but then I managed to put the next string of fights together.
Wasn't that an amateur fight, though?
No. My very first fight was pro, and then my next two were amateur. Because it was, you know, it was the Wild West back then. It didn't matter. There was no commission, there was no regulation.
Yeah.
You know, the difference back then between pro and amateur was, you know, did they pay you or did they not pay you? That was it.
Well, kind of threw my thought off there, but you know what? You went on.
Yeah.
You know, you did have the four wins after Mike Pyle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what did it teach John Fitch, the man that already had encapsulated life as far as knowledge and started to get a taste and a joy for the sport? What did that mean to you, seeing that you can be successful if you set your mind for it?
Well, I mean, one of the biggest things I learned is, like, I needed to find better training. One of the things that helped me out a lot is on my first fight, I met Brian Ebersole. And Brian Ebersole had been fighting for a couple years at the time. So he kind of had a lot of connections in what I call the Midwest circuit. He knew some promoters, and he had some training strategies that I hadn't been around to or exposed to. He had some knowledge that I didn't have. And I could see how a little bit of knowledge went a long way in the fight game. So I knew that I needed to relocate. I needed to move. Like, I wasn't going to get what I needed to at the time in Indiana. There just wasn't any training. So, you know, I think especially after I lost to Wilson Govea, I knew that, like, I had to go somewhere to train full time. Otherwise, I wasn't getting anywhere.
Yeah. And you chose a tremendous place to be in AKA. You know, the thing that most people in this sport don't know, you know, and I love to rub this in because I know it. You went from light heavyweight, and for some reason you decided to change to middleweight. When you jumped to middleweight, you had tremendous success. You know, you beat Shoni Carter. You beat Alex. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name because I'm just going to look like a joke. You know, did you feel more relevant in the sport making that change to middleweight? Was it much easier for you to compete at that aspect?
Well, I mean, for first off, I didn't realize how big light heavyweights were, how big a lot of the guys were, until I got to a place where I was around more fighters and I could see how big the guys were and how, you know, just the reach wasn't there, and I probably wasn't going to be able to put on the size to compete at light heavyweight. So my natural weight started coming down just from training all the time when I moved out to AKA. And from there, you know, I started eyeballing 170 because, you know, I was walking around at 190. I thought 170 was doable. But I didn't get a chance to fight at 170 until, you know, my fight before the UFC. Like, even the Shoni Carter fight, he called and asked to fight at 175 because he didn't want to make the weight to 170. So I couldn't find anybody for a while to fight me at 170. It wasn't until I fought Jeff Jocelyn at 170 that was my first weight cut down to 170. And even to get into 185, or to get into the UFC, I had to take a fight at 185. I had to move back up. But, you know, it was kind of one of those things where you just kind of, if you wanted to be busy, you had to take the fights wherever. Where I was trying to fight at 170, there just weren't any options. Nobody was offering me a fight there. Nobody would take a fight with a college wrestler that was tough that nobody knew of at the time. It was too tough of a fight.
Yeah, and that's a lot of problem with the sport today is a lot of these guys, but it's in reverse now. A lot of these guys that are undefeated, they're unwilling to take fights because they're afraid to mess up their record. And here you are, guys won't fight you because I guess you could say it's essentially the same thing. They're afraid to face John Fitch, a kid they never heard of. But you know,
so it's an issue with notoriety, and we don't have a amateur feeding system. So we have a problem with guys coming into the pro ranks, and they haven't been tested. Nobody knows who they are. There's no knowledge around them. So there's no notoriety. So it's hard to get started sometimes.
And then you have John. I'm gonna put you on the spot. I've never asked you an elephant in the room question, but I need to, bro, because you're part of this, the foundation of the sport. So I would really like your thoughts on it, because I've asked several legends that have come on my show and several world champions. Do you think the aspects, you know, I could deal with Conor McGregor aspect, you know, coming into the sport because it's entertainment. But do you think the theatrics of fighters like Colby Covington should be allowed to be portrayed in the sport? Because it disillusions other fighters. It gets other fighters to think that's the way that you make it to the top. Do you think the aspects of what Colby Covington is doing and has done in the last couple of days should be acceptable in the sport of mixed martial arts?
I mean, guys are going to do what they want to do, but I think the UFC is, you know, made their bed, and they're being forced to lie in it. They've rewarded guys for antics outside of the cage. And it goes again, that goes into the notoriety. They don't put enough weight on merit. You know, they don't put enough weight on performance and winning fights. That's where your notoriety should come from. But instead, they've turned it into this entertainment fiasco. So they've rewarded guys for acting, you know, ridiculous. So, I mean, it's not going to get any better. Like, unless you...
No, it's just going to get worse. And
yep, unless you turn hardcore into a meritocracy. Unless you take a, you know, you turn into the curve and try to straighten things out and go back to merit, like, it's not going to change. You're going to keep getting these guys who just try to talk their way into fights. And it didn't start with Conor. It started with, it got really bad with Shale.
Yeah.
Like Shale Sonnen. Like, he didn't have the merit established to fight the fights he got. He talked his way into it. Well, I mean, good for Shale, but I don't know. I think it's just the UFC's kind of, you know, screwed themselves. Because unless they correct it somehow, it's going to continue. You're going to see 10 Colby Covingtons in the next, next years, especially you get guys who are dissatisfied with not getting title shots, being robbed of interim titles, all this stuff. It's going to, you know, people are just going to take it as, oh, well, see, you've got to promote yourself harder. You've got to be more of a spectacle. You've got to talk more shit.
And see, that's sad because, you know, I had a call with Jacob Fitzgerald the other night, a true brother of mine, and he was calling, we were talking to each other because I wanted to let him know how proud I was about what he's done in Creed, but he wanted to let me know how proud he was, you know, me seeing adversity after adversity and still continuing on. And the reason I bring that up is because there's been adversity in your career, John, and, you know, you've had your ups and downs. That wouldn't be a life of a fighter if it was simply perfect. You know, you got that opportunity before this fight that's coming up in April to step back into Bellator. Now, with the training camp and the gym that you, you know, attend, you know, happens to be one of my favorite in the country, you know, you look at, you've got a room full of champions. And if they're not current champions, they've been champions in the past. How humbling and how much knowledge does John Fitch gain from having Daniel Cormier, Cain Velasquez, and on and on and on? You know, could be everybody coming out of there that is a world champion and still on their way to becoming one. How much humility is expressed between fellow champions as brothers? You know, because most people think of it as, oh, well, they're a champion and this and that. But when it comes to the gym, there's that camaraderie that can't be spoke about. There's a camaraderie that most people don't even, you know, realize exists. But what do you gain from the knowledge of those champions? And how do you guys help each other move
forward?
You know,
I mean, I think really it's not a matter of what are all these champions bringing to the table. I think it's a matter of the mindset of us who train there that creates the champions, right? So we're not thinking of this outside stuff when we go into train, but we all have that mindset of getting there, getting the work done, pushing each other, and that's what creates the championships. You know, it's not the championships that create the other stuff. It's they don't create themselves. It's the behaviors. It's the way we push. It's the way we work together. It's the mindset of the guys that go in there and work every day. You know, you might be feeling a little flat or a little off one day, but then you got 10 guys around you who are there to push, who are there to pick you up and push you and keep you going. And, you know, that's one of the biggest battles. If you can just get to the gym, you're going to have a good day.
What types of aspects has Javi instilled in John Fitch? You know, has John Fitch had those one-on-one moments with Javier? And what did you take away from those, that type of aspects of the sport, John?
You know, the times I've worked with Hav, we've worked on a lot of footwork and power punching. But, I mean, I think mostly he's helped me realize that you've got to, you know, early on pick the right fights and, you know, make sure you have a little bit of a career trajectory with what you're doing, rather than just, you know, just take any fight that comes. You know, he's had some impact on stuff outside of training and fighting in that regard. You know, the importance of picking the right opponents until you're at the position to fight any opponent. Some guys, you know, they jump into the deep water before they can really, you know, swim anything other than a dog paddle.
I like that. I really do. You know, as you know, we've spoke about before in further other shows that we've done earlier in our careers, you know, I know what it's like to be at AKA. I've been there, you know, I've shot all your tremendous teammates, and, you know, one really grew on me and is still a friend to this day, and that's Daniel Cormier. You know, I first met him when he was starting a youth wrestling program at AKA, and then, you know, most people don't even realize that DC didn't start fighting until he was 30 years old, theoretically, you know, and so you look at what AKA has done for him, and now you see what AKA is doing for you. What is this opportunity now to, you know, to go against a world champion at Bellator 220 and Rory McDonald? What does it truly mean to John Fitch? Is this a John Fitch that's just revised, revamped, or is it a John Fitch that now is ready to show the world that you're here to stay in the sport?
No, I mean, I've said this a number of times. I think, you know, this is my right off into the sunset moment. I want to win this tournament, move up, fight for the 85-pound title, and then call it a day. I think this is, you know, final chapter of the story. You know, let's go all in and get things done. I think I've had a great career. I'm very, very satisfied with it. You know, even if it ended today, I would be, you know, super happy with my career. But I want one last triumph, one last little thing to, one last feather to put in the cap, I think, before I mount up and ride off into the sunset.
Yeah, I like that. You know, when you think about it that way, John, what would it truly mean? I mean, hypothetically speaking, what would it truly mean for John Fitch to walk out of the sport as a champion, not just as a warrior, but as a man? Will you feel complete? Will you feel like that you have accomplished what you set to from the beginning?
I mean, I already feel complete. This is just, it's just something extra, something else I want. I'm going to put everything I into having, everything I can into having it. And, you know, as long as I put my best effort in all aspects of it, I'm going to be satisfied.
You know, this is kind of a question that I've always wanted to ask you, because the humility and integrity that you have, John, is tremendous. And I could be wrong in my assumptions, but being a champion isn't really what it's really meant to you. Would that be a fair assessment?
I mean, it is. It's a pinnacle you need to strive for. You need to have goals. You need to set goals and push yourself. But at the same time, you know, your achievements don't define you. Like, your job doesn't define you. You know, you need to have your missions and work to get there. But you can't be too outcome dependent on things. You can't be crushed. If you came up a little short, you just got to keep trying, just keep going after it. Keep finding a new fight, keep finding a new battle. Always be pushing yourself, no matter what you're aiming towards. And if you get it, awesome. If you don't, try again.
Exactly. I like that. You know, this is a tremendous opportunity for you. I'm not going to deny it. I think it is. You know, I look at the sport nowadays, and a lot of us, old schoolers and photographers and things of that nature, we've had multiple talks, and we honestly don't think that you can become a world champion anymore without a wrestling pedigree. You used to look at the beginning of the sport, and you can come from a BJJ background, kickboxing background, or whatever, and you can be world champion. But the sport has evolved, and we think that, you know, not only with the aspects that most thought you had to have, but wrestling nowadays is an absolute must. So with that being said, do you feel that that's what's allowed John Fitch to have the type of career that you've had in the sport all along, as your wrestling pedigree, and then formulating yourself around that aspect?
I mean, yeah, but not just the, because the wrestling techniques or skills, the mindset wrestling gives you, and the you know, the way to work hard, the teaching you how to work hard, you know, that type of stuff, goal setting, and those are the things that are the most important aspects of wrestling. You get put in a bad position daily. You're forced to face it, you know. Humbling adversity on a daily basis in wrestling, and that's the real takeaway. That's what you really benefit the most of out of a sport like wrestling.
Yeah, that's tremendous. You know, John, a lot of times in life we don't realize where we're going to end up. Now that you sit back and you look over the shoulder of John Fitch, you know, how great